Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for coming and staying so far, and to all of those wonderful people out there on the internet that are so unfortunate they can't be here sitting in front of Radhakala Chanji and getting their mercy and darshan while you're hearing the purificatory process of hearing and chanting about Kali Yuga. What a wonderful opportunity is to surrender to Krishna and go back to Godhead rather than stay here while it gets worse. Text 39. Kritam tretat vaparam cha kalis cheti chatur judam anena kramajogena Bhuvi pranishu vartate. Please repeat. Kretam jaita dvaparam cha. Kalis cheti chatur yugam. Anena karma jogena. Bhuvi pranishu vartate. Word for word, kritam satya yuga, treta yuga, dvapara yuga, cha, and kali yuga, cha, and iti, thus, chatujugam, the cycle of four ages. Anena, by this, krama, sequential. Jogena, pattern. Bhuvi, in this world. Pranishu, among living beings. Vartate, goes on continuously. So, we can read through verse 41, where there's a purport. Verse 39. The cycle of four ages, Satya, Treta, Dvapara, and Kali, continues perpetually among living beings on this earth, repeating the same general sequence of events. It's funny, we see how nothing ever changes, and how these conclusions of Vedic knowledge seep in everywhere. Because in the West, we say, history repeats itself. In the Bhagavatam, it says, repeating the same general sequence of events. The material world does not allow us to see the error of our ways. Text 40. Rajane te maya prokta naradevas tatarvate. Bhumau mamatvam kutvante itvamam nidanam gataha. My dear King Parikshit, all these kings I have described, as well as all other human beings, come to this earth and stake their claims. But ultimately, they all must give up this world and meet their destruction. Text 41. This is such a famous verse. It actually happens in, I think, one or two other places in the Bhagavatam, this same concept. Krini vidbashma samgate raja namno piyastacha bhuta druk tat kute svaratam kim veda nidaya nirayo yataha. Even though a person's body now may now have the designation king, in the end, its name will be creamy, worms, vit, stool, or vashma, ashes. What can a person who injures other living beings for the sake of his body know about his own self-interest, since his activities are simply leading him to hell? Purport by the most empowered disciples of Srila Prabhupada to finish this great work of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which, like the sun, is brilliant light in this dark age of Kali. After death, the body may be buried and eaten by worms, or it may be thrown in the street or forest and be eaten by animals who will pass out its remnants as stool. Or it may be burned and converted into ashes. Therefore, one should not pave his way to hell by using his temporary body to injure the bodies of other living beings. In this verse, the word bhuta includes non-human life forms who are also creatures of God. One should give up all envious violence and learn to see God in everything by the process of Krishna consciousness. Om Ajnanati Manandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshumarikam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Vanti Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kupashundubhyevacha Patitinam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadvaita Garadha Shivasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Mukum Karoti Vachanam Panguna Gayate Gurum. Tanam Shigurum Dumatanam. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shri Mata Tamo Krishna Gosana Nityananda. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvesesha Sunyavani Astata Distatarane. Well, I don't know if there's anything that needs to be added. This is such a clear verse and set of verses, and even just the description of what's going on, that yuga after yuga, yuge yuge, the living entities born into this world of birth and death, and as Krishna does say in the Bhagavad Gita, if you're born, you die. If you die, you're born. Unless man mam yaji man, just you surrender to Krishna. Just surrender to Krishna. You have no other recourse. It says right here, it's going to keep happening. Everybody's going to take birth again, go through the same cycle of screw ups, mistakes, misidentifications. As to what is real, what is temporary, what is permanent, what is spiritual. All of these concepts are always there in society. It's what separates human society from the animal society. What doesn't separate human society from animal society is that the body is just a vehicle to carry the soul, equipped with, according to Krishna, a certain set of senses, which are grouped around a mind that specifically corresponds to that body. In our body as a human being, we have these really cool opposable thumbs. If we did not have those, how would we possibly be able to use our smartphone? Or reach anything or grab stuff and things like that. It gives us a certain tactile capacity to increase our concept of human life. Doesn't it? We were able to make cars and bicycles, computers. We make so many things because we have a capacity to produce separate from our bare maintenance in life. Right? You watch. Watch the little animals out in the yard. What? Don't watch them at night. You'll be amazed at what lives in this neighborhood. Raccoons and possums and all these other things. You know, goodness knows what else. But watch them during the daytime when they're active and trying to eat and trying to maintain their life. Can you imagine squirrels? They have a very tiny brain, and they hide nuts and acorns and seeds and all kind of stuff all through the fall in preparation for the winter when it becomes very difficult to find anything to eat. But they hide so much they have no idea where it is. So they scurry around in the wintertime just digging everywhere, trying to find something that they bury so that they can eat and go back to sleep for the winter. So frustrating, just trying to eat in certain seasons of the year that they just go and sleep. It's just too hard. It's just too hard. You know, I mean, does a living entity actually need to sleep for days on end, months on end, in order to survive? No. It's just too hard to exist in this material world. So the animals simply get into the mode of ignorance. Some animals, not all of them. They go into the mode of ignorance so deep that they can't get out for days and weeks and months. They don't get to choose as much as the human being does. Right? We can choose just what kind of heat we want in our house. I used to sell air conditioning equipment. You can have gas heat, you can have electric heat blowing through a central unit or individual little room heaters, space heaters, they call it. You could have wood stoves that heat the whole house, or you can decide how far away you want to get from the wood stove to what temperature you actually want it to be, because you can't control fire very much. We were having a discussion earlier today about the interesting qualities of fire and how it affects the living entity, particularly human beings. It can burn anybody, has no discretion whatsoever. You can have all full knowledge of fire. You can be a cook who knows what to do with fire. He knows how to transform fire to delicious tasting foodstuffs, nutritious and non-nutritious and all kind of other things. But at the same time, if you're just not quite careful enough, it will burn you. Just for your neglect. Powerful element. Water. We can't live without it, nor can we live in it. What a paradox. The human being or any of the animals on the land jump into the water and try to live, they'll eventually get tired and sink and die. And if you take a fish out of the water, same problem. Like we Srila Prabhupada once used that example of the difference between water and land livers as the reasoning for believing and understanding that there's living entities everywhere. Completely different atmospheric conditions. Yet one group of living entities live under the water and another group of living entities live on top of the water or next to the water. And this happens always, continuously, forever, until Mahavishnu inhales. And then, and who can even calculate the amount of time it takes for every single universe to enter back into his body and in resulting in a full annihilation of any and all bodies still there in the universe. All planets are destroyed. Dissolved back into, we're done, the concept of creation. It's funny. This entire creation as we know it has a start in just the thought, or that type of energy that creates a thought. Mahavishnu, Shared Akshay Vishnu, Karanad Akshay Vishnu, Krishna himself have the ability to move that thought into manifested existence. And the human being is thinking he's very powerful because he can manipulate that existence into something else based on the existence of what's already there. We create nothing. We can combine and make a different mix, but we cannot create anything. How powerful are we compared to God? And since we aren't powerful compared to God, we create philosophies which accommodate our perceived superiority over all that we survey, everything we know and see and etc. We put ourselves at the top of that pyramid. Interesting how we can be so bold. So bold. Knowing that at the end of this life, that body that we held as ourselves will turn into worms, stool, or ashes. Now what you're going to do with it? How proud are you? Have you ever seen an urn of somebody's ashes? It doesn't look any different than any other ash. As one nice acharya once said that was here, we were studying the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, and I forget what. But somebody burned themselves up in the ash, and he said, and you just see how the living entities are capable of making a complete ash of themselves in this material world. And as funny as that sounds, nobody likes ashes being around anywhere. It's just dirt. It's something that creates unclean places or so. Well, you know, you can take ash and a little lemon juice and scrub your pots and pans and plates and wash it all off, and it is good. But in their ways they're using it. I mean, in Ayurveda, so many different medicines are made from the ashes of jewels, metals, herbs and roots, things like that. Bhasma. Everything has value relative to Krishna, not separate from Krishna. They have no value. An ash not connected to Krishna is just an ash. No big value. And it goes like this ad infinitum. Because it doesn't matter. The universes are created by the thoughts of Lord Vishnu. And it's inhabited by the thoughts of Krishna and Vishnu through Lord Brahma in his thoughts. And then manifest is something that looks real. And there's always plenty to fill up every universe, which are innumerable. And this entire material creation is but one quarter of the actual creation. Three quarters of it's all spiritual. So the spiritual creation is three times larger, four times larger than the material aspect of that entire creation, which is a lot by our vision and our understanding and our measurements and so many things. Someone just mentioned to me this morning that the the Chinese have landed on the dark side of the moon. There's a lot of conjecture about that. Is the moon actually a globe that shines everywhere? Since the moonshine is an illumination emanating from, as one of Krishna's eyes, sun and the moon. Or, we go back about a century or so to the rather macabre, is how he's described, writer, H.P. Lovecraft, which wrote lots of interesting things about souls and reanimation. And his opinion is that the dark side of the moon is covered in cats. He had problems. He spent a lot of time thinking up these things while recovering from various episodes in a mental hospital. But he was an incredibly imaginative writer. I mean, they didn't pay him anything until he died, but hey, he wasn't happy, just creating. And he created. He understood the separation of the body from life. That life happens when life is within the body, not separate. So all these Vedic conclusions, they circulate. They're always there. Somehow someone picks it up. Right? I mean, even the rock and rollers had a few things right. I can't get no satisfaction. You can't always get what you want, but by Krishna's arrangement, you get what you need. I mean, it's remarkable. This is Vedic knowledge being thrown out there in the air for someone to utilize to spark some interest in something better than what we experience as life. And that also happens eternally, and it also happens cyclically, and it also happens in every age, all the time, that someone gets inspired to rise above the bodily platform, to the spiritual platform, go back home, back to Godhead, where there actually is that one thing we're searching for, true happiness, available. The only place it's available. By separating oneself from the entire material energy. The material energy is designed to fool you into a false sense of security, false sense of enjoyment, false sense of beauty. Right? But because there is a real beauty, there is a real security, there is a real happiness by the direction of the soul, way back there in the background of our consciousness. We actually seek these qualities in our life. And because we don't give up that struggle, the soul keeps trying to get out from under the covers of the material energy, to be able to experience actual happiness and security and life. That also goes on forever. So there's always and forever hope that it will happen to us. Inadvertently, by getting prasadam, hearing the holy names from someone else, or who knows, whatever can happen. Or better than that, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, surrender to me. And if the soul can uncover itself long enough for the conscious mind, which is a material energy, to think, yes, I will, and go and do it, then eternal happiness, bliss, knowledge becomes available to that person. Wow, we did it. But Krishna also says, I do realize you're not really just going to do that. So follow the process of bhakti yoga. And as a result of all the bhakti yoga that we perform, forcing our mind and our intelligence and our false ego to submit to that which is the supreme, eternal, absolute truth, Krishna, we come to the stage we actually want Krishna. And Krishna then can decide whether he wants to give himself to you. Because the Krishna is also known as Bhaktavatsala. He's very kind to his devotees. He is controlled by his devotees. So he's not going to let anybody control him. You have to come to Krishna. Begging that you may once again reestablish your relationship in service and love with Krishna. And then, if he feels confident enough in your sincerity and purity of purpose, then he will give himself to you. But it's his choice, not yours. It's not your qualifications as much as Krishna's mercy that exchange happens. So, in this Kali Yuga particularly, we're given this wonderful process of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And Lord Chaitanya came to give us a little hint to how this is going to work. You stay in the association of devotees and you chant this Hare Krishna with great enthusiasm collectively, so that collective desire to have Krishna gives you the strength to carry forth and do your own personal relationship with the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna Himself. Any questions? Comments, psychoanalysis. Yeah, 41 is that all the kings described, as well as other human beings, come to this earth, stake their claims, but ultimately they must all give up this world and meet their destruction. So you're going to be destroyed anyway. No matter what you're able to do on a material level, it all gets dashed. Yes, Mataji is saying we stake our claim on some conception of what we can do. And Mataji is saying that the psychology behind that is that once we see that we're there, we tend to formulate something wherein we can say, this is mine, this is my heritage, this is my legacy, this is my, it's just Maya. And therefore, all those activities, as she was saying in the last line, his activities, and they're talking about kings, our activities, everyone's activities, are simply leading them to hell, to suffer more. All that we do to protect ourselves from that suffering, to try to be happy, to try to be secure, to try to be all of these things, just lead us to destruction and hellish, miserable conditions that we really, really worked hard not to have. It's an illusion. And that's actually really the ahankar, the false ego. The false ego is that belief that we're the body. Ahankara. Actual ego is that we're the soul. So it's all based on the premise that we have something to do with this body. We don't. From the perspective of the soul, we have a body to do something for the soul with. And anything short of that becomes karma. Karma, according to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, is those activities which result in a new material body. Group of senses centered around the mind, controlled by the intelligence, and directed and kept in place by the false ego, the false concept that this is real. Yeah. And in the destruction of this wonderful body that we think we have, we end up as worms, stool, or ashes. Nothing of which anybody particularly values. Unless, of course, you're an organic gardener like my wife, and she really likes worms. They are her friends. But all of those things that grow in these gardens literally go to the temple. They don't go to a house. It all goes the other direction. And that's good. My wife is very determined like that. It's very wonderful that we see examples of devotees who understand that everything is Krishna's first. And if we're very nice and behave, we get to use some of Krishna's creation for a little bit of pleasure out there in the material world. And if we can consistently learn to offer that option to pleasure to Krishna first, and yes, we truly do get to taste a little bit of that eternal happiness and security and love that exists only on the spiritual plane. Thank you, Mataji, very much. So just so it's out there, Chandrabhaga Mataji is the one that's in class today, helping to carry it further. Hare Krishna. Thank you.